Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff.
And I am Brett. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. We are doing this at a different time. I'm in the daylight.
Yes.
What do you think about that?
It looks very nice. I can't see much of behind you, no, because it's blurred out with the strength of the sun.
Okay.
But it looks nice, though.
I've positioned a wet mop just over my left shoulder, so you can see that.
I can't say that, and the reason I kind of say that, Cliff, is I'm using the mother-in-law's computer, and she seems to have signed up to some kind of ads that keep popping up on the right-hand side of the screen.
Okay.
So I've got fresh strawberry pie on offer here, exclusive 15% off The Works.
Books. Oh, the crafts. Whole works.
The works. The full works. And I've got 15% off spring and summer getaways, presumably not abroad. So I've got on my screen, so
100% off them because nobody's going anywhere. That list of places that you can go to is disappointing for us because it means that we still can't get back without quarantine, and so it makes it pointless. It's very disappointing because we won't get back. But the list of places that you can come from is mental. The Sandwich Islands. Does the UK?
The Sandwich Islands.
Yeah, South Sandwich Islands, not the North ones. Does the UK get a lot of visitors from there?
I often have a lot of visitors from the Sandwich Isles.
I know that that's what you call it when you get a takeaway delivery. Welcome to the Sandwich Islands.
I've never even heard of the Sandwich Islands.
All of the Faroe Isles. You come from
I've heard of that isle.
Where there's one flight a week that holds about 50 people. Brilliant. It's silly. Well, it's daylight, as I say. You can see, you would be able to see the mop over my shoulder. And hopefully those ads disappear, because over the course of the next hour, you're in for a right treat, because you'll see the sun go down. Are you joining me?
Oh, that would... Nice, that will be nice. Yes, that'll be lovely.
Talking about the pop-up ads, old people should have... I realize I've called your mother-in-law old there, but the older generation should be like, you know how you have parental controls for your kids? You should have like parent controls for your parents, because there's so much stuff on the internet that they shouldn't be allowed access to. Or the ability to get all those pop-up ads up and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, I thought it was only porn websites that did the pop-ups, but obviously, you know, the travel lodge are getting in on it now.
This is mother-in-law porn, isn't it? 15% off a fresh strawberry pie. Whoa.
Click on that. Yes, that'll do for me. Definitely. They're still on. I kind of get rid of them. I'll try and get rid of them, look. See
While you're doing that, I've got a bird update.
No, they're not back, are they?
They're back. A new nest.
No way.
And presumably a new family. Siblings.
You've looked after them too well and they've returned. You should have mistreated them. That's what you should have done.
If you have a look on Pigeon TripAdvisor, I'm number one in UAE.
Are you?
Yeah.
15% off all your new
to be honest, birds. I shouldn't have put that offer out because I've been inundated with pigeons trying to get a space on this balcony.
It's like the Ritz, isn't it, for your pigeons? So is the wife looking after these ones again, is she?
Not well, actually, we didn't. They've got better at it. What was that? A scream.
I didn't know. I heard some odd scream, like a cry of a monkey. You got any monkeys?
No, I haven't opened up to the monkey market yet.
No, you should though. That would be good. That would be better.
There's kids playing out here, man. They're idiots. Mm-hmm. Just make a lot of noise. I've covered the birds off, so you know about them. The other thing, I know you probably want to talk about topical stuff, but at the minute, I've been thinking a lot about spoons. What's your thoughts?
I think they're very important pieces of cutlery. That's what I think.
Uh-huh. I'm using them more and more.
Yeah. Why? Have you lost the ability to use the fork and knife?
Well, I've lost. I don't have one anymore, so... All the best food is food you can eat with a spoon.
I'm liking the fact that you've just moved on to spoons.
I just.
So is that all you've been doing this week then?
Just using spoons.
Thinking about your spoon.
Using spoons, right? Yeah.
I've been watching a little bit of TV, and I've discovered some rather sinister things about TV.
Okay.
Namely, the first thing is, I don't normally watch this, but have you ever seen the titles for Homes Under the Hammer? That is incredibly sinister.
No.
Really sinister. I thought I had accidentally ingested some acid or something. And the titles, it's various notes. You might have your £5 note. You might have your £10 note.
Okay.
You might even have your £50 note. The faces of the notes change and wink at you and smile at you through the credits. It's just so weird. And obviously the program's not much better, is it?
You're putting a house in auction?
They go to auctions and stuff like that, and people...
Are they buying them or selling
buy
them?
Houses. They buy them, do them up, and then flog them.
So it's That's that full journey within one episode. I'm going to buy a house, work on it, and then sell it and see how much I make. So it's like a longer, more expensive version of the David Dickinson one, where they just buy like an old clock and then try and sell it.
And this has got Dion Dublin in it.
Oh, do you remember Dion Dublin's instrument?
Yes, is he bongos things or something? He's drums that he invented.
The little box thing that he sits on.
I do, I also remember the story that Alex Ferguson told about.
You could have talked about that instrument.
But the other thing that was sinister was adverts. Adverts are growing increasingly sinister, I think. Okay. Especially the ones that involve... Is his name Rylan?
Oh, I don't like it. The car ones.
Yeah, that is the weirdest thing.
Telling people to buy cheap cars.
Why is he in the house? Why is Rylan in the house? And it starts by going like the wife or whatever. By your husband's put a little bit of weight on, hasn't he? What's it got to do with him? And then he's sort of saying, "What you really need is snitch." What?
I don't.
Why
like
is he
it.
In the house?
I don't.
No,
like
I
it.
Don't like it. And then he's another one which is for like bingo or something like that. And he's also in the house, but this time he's more like a poltergeist or something, because he's not there in bodily form. He's just like commentating on what they're doing. I think he's a bit of a strange man, strange character. That's what I'd say about Rylan.
How old do you think he'll live to see? What age?
Well, he could live forever more if he's a poltergeist, couldn't he? I mean, unless they exercise him. Most definitely should do.
I think you might be a shoo-in for an early death.
Well, actually, the mother, I said this to the mother-in-law, and she says, "Yeah, I'm really worried about him. I like him.
He seems to
be losing a lot of weight."
I told you, something's not going right for him. Mother-in-law's no.
They do. But that's just strange, him being in people's houses and stuff like that.
We're going to talk about a film that I'd never seen of, heard of, knew anything about until you mentioned it. And since you mentioned it, I've seen loads of people talk about it because it's on.
Really?
On Talking Pictures on Friday night at 9 p.m. Uh-huh. The Friday night that this will go out.
That's mad.
I got quite excited about it. And it's also called Raw Meat. somehow in America. It got called Raw Meat. And it, the cover, the poster and artwork for that is not representative of what the film's like whatsoever.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think in America, they try to market it as a zombie film. It's got, hasn't got any zombies.
It also looks quite sexy.
It's got naked women on the cover. It's not sexy at all. There's no sexiness involved, is there? Maybe it's 5 minutes at the start if you're a sleazy man.
You don't really see it, though, do you?
No, you don't see now. You don't see now. So I went on a bit of a Donald Pleasance journey, just trying to watch as many of his films as I could. And I kind of stumbled across this one. And I was glad that I did, like, because I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it's great. It seems like one of those lost kind of British horror, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a lot of British horror films made over the course of the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s with Hammer and stuff like that. So presumably a lot of things got kind of lost. It reminded us a little bit of, there's a film called Peepin' Tom that I first watched at university, which is pretty much like a British version or a bit of a precursor to, I think it came out as, the same year as Psycho. Anyway, Martin Scorsese says it's like his favorite film, talks about it all the time, and we had to watch it at university, and it's like this kind of sick, perverted, like horror, basically, like a killer is killing people.
The guy with the blonde hair taking photographs of people,
isn't it?
I think I started watching it, but I didn't quite finish it for some reason. I don't know why.
It is good, but it's a bit like I think this is a bit easier to watch in some ways, even though there's some horrible bits in this as well. But anyway, I would kind of put it with that as like these kind of potentially people haven't heard of them or seen them. I hadn't until now, you know. I've studied film and, you know, we talk about films all the time. Never seen of it or anything.
No.
It's fucking brilliant.
It is brilliant. Well, I was just going to say it's a bit strange there, because after watching the film, I was looking on YouTube for different clips of it and stuff like that and different things about it. And one of them was Edgar Wright, who was saying it's one of his favourite horror films, is Deathline. So similar type of thing. I think he's probably, you know, championed this film with it being one of his favourites and stuff. So yeah. But it's excellent, this film. I really enjoy it.
Came out in 1972. It stars Donald Pleasance. And I have to be honest, you're talking about watching Donald Pleasance films after Escape from New York, I presume.
Well, no, just watching everything that I could, because I found one where it's about Burke and Hare. It's got Peter Cushing. I watched that one this week. That was excellent. Okay. And I also watched another one called The Mutations, which is quite a nasty film.
Okay.
But I still enjoyed that one.
I don't think I've seen him in many things. I think like he's one of those names. I know the name. I know that he's a big actor and stuff, but actually, I don't know what I've seen him in, but maybe I've seen him in things I've not realised, but I presume by the 80s and 90s, he's not appearing in Hollywood blockbusters and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the thing of being a John Carpenter fan, he's in a lot of John Carpenter stuff, so he's in like Prince of Darkness, he's in Escape from New York, and obviously Halloween, which is the thing that he's most famous for, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always liked him. And I mean, he is in some of my favourite films, like I've just said there. But I've never really saw him being like absolutely fantastic. He's never like blown me mind how good he was.
No, because he's amazing.
But
I think in the John Carpenter stuff, he's, you know, you can watch Escape from New York, he's a weird choice for that character. His accent's all over the place. Mm-hmm. His acting style doesn't really fit. I think he's still good in it, but you can.
Yeah.
I think there's reasons why he's not like wow, that performance was fantastic. Whereas this film, I mean, he's perfect in it. His accent's a little bit dodgy because he's obviously a well-spoken guy and he's meant to be like a kind of cockney.
Like working class cop, isn't he? Yeah.
So his accent keeps veering into being a bit posh and a bit cockney here and there, but a tiny, tiny quibble that, because this is for such a grim subject matter, he's hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And if he wasn't...
He's absolutely hilarious.
If he wasn't, it wouldn't be an enjoyable film at all.
That's what, exactly what I was thinking. I mean, I like the premise of the film and stuff like that. But Donald Pleasance just makes it. He's like chewing the scenery all over the place, isn't he?
But it's and not
it,
over
you
the,
just want him to come back. No, it's not over the top. It's really funny, and he's like really witty. Basically, what he's doing throughout the whole film is just taking the piss out of every single person.
Yeah. He's very sarcastic, and he's got a one-liner for everyone, and he doesn't take the job or the investigation that he's working on seriously by the... I mean, even when he finds, even at the end, he's not like, he hasn't really done the work to solve this case, has he? It's like chance.
Not really, no, it's by chance.
So the case is, we'll have to be careful of spoilers. The plot of the film is young couple on the tube on the way home from somewhere, an American guy and a English lady come across this unconscious man at the bottom of the stairs on the last tube home. Go and tell somebody there's a guy down there who's unconscious, by the way. I think he's dying. The guy's a bit like, hey, he's just pissed. And then they go back down with the cop and he's gone.
That's right.
It turns out...
The American guy wants to step over him and just leave him because that's what you do in New York.
Because, I'm American. These guys are deadbeat.
He's drunk, man. Let's just leave him. And his girlfriend's having none of that.
Yeah, she's like, no, we need to sort it out. We need to help him. So the cop goes and has a look, but the fella's gone. Turns out that he's from the Ministry of Defense or something like that. And so all of a sudden, people are actually quite interested in this fella going missing. And Donald Pleasance is a cop, ably assisted by Norman Rossington, another fantastic actor, Hard Day's Night, Carry On films.
Yeah.
Like, he's a fucking legend, this guy. Also brilliant.
They're brilliant together, aren't they? They're excellent together.
He's almost like a straight man, but because he's naturally funny, this guy, and he's got quite a funny appearance. He's got a striking appearance, let's say. He's not totally serious, but he's certainly the straight guy, the Pleasance's one who's taking the piss all the time.
Madcap, taking the... Aye, definitely. The thing is, what I was thinking when I was watching this film is, like, TV executives have, like, missed a trick, haven't they? And not, like, making this a TV series and just having Donald Pleasance and Norman Rossington in some kind of TV show where he's the cop or whatever and they just solve mysterious crimes.
Yeah,
they've missed the trick completely.
But also the actual premise of the show, like, think how popular the film, I should say. Think how popular stuff like The Walking Dead is. String that out over 10 series or whatever. You can imagine a 10-episode series about what's going on in this film easily, like now, in the New York subway or whatever. So basically he goes missing. And then the man from Keeping Up Appearances shows up.
He does, yes. And he explains that in the 1800s, in the late 1800s, there was a cave-in while people were digging out the tunnels in the London Underground.
So they're going to basically, as they're building it.
There was a cave-in. And the company who was funding these tunnels and stations and stuff went bust. So they just left all the people in there.
12 people, 8 men, 4 women.
Yeah.
Just left them there. And 4 this guy's going, you know, he probably survived a while because there's plenty of water down there and there's pockets of air. So they would have been able to survive a bit. And he's like, and Donald Pleasance goes, but what about food? And he goes, well, presumably after a while, you know.
They probably ate each other.
Started eating each other, which is, I think the normal way of thinking would have been, probably after a while they just died.
I know, but it's trying to explain.
We're
like,
in. Bang.
The premise
great
of
exposition.
The film,
great exposition. So now you're like, oh shit, this guy's gone missing. And presumably these people still exist down there. It is fucking brilliant. What we haven't touched on there is the opening credits and the music.
Which are great. Yeah, which are brilliant, by a guy called Will Malone, which people might not know the name, but they'll certainly know his music, won't they? Because he's
been part you told of, like, me earlier on, amazing.
Yeah, he's been part of, like, you know, popular music that always stick out in your memory, like, especially if you're sort of thinking of strings and stuff like that, like Bittersweet Symphony and Unfinished Symphony, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Lonely Soul by Uncle. Yeah. So he arranged all those strings and stuff. I think he's a producer, and he's worked like Peter Gabriel. I think he did The Who, Tommy's album as well. Okay. So loads of stuff. But the tune... No, well, there's strings in it. There's strings in it, but it's all very synthy, isn't it?
It is.
It's a very synthy, fucking sleazy horrible number.
I mean, if you wanted to, if there was some way of the image of sleaze in music form, it would be this. Obviously, accompanied by the visuals as well, because you've got...
Yeah.
Well, what you do see at the beginning is the guy who turns out to be this Ministry of Defence fella, bowler hat.
Yeah, Mr. OBE.
Suit. and you can just see the images are kind of, you know, the bright lights of Soho kind of in and out of focus as he's like wandering around, going into like a girly show and into like a kind of porn cinema, sleazy Soho, like late 60s, early 70s scene. And these lights
he's
are
obviously
kind of,
up to no good, isn't
he's
he?
Up to no good. You can tell he's a fancy man going into sleazy places where he probably shouldn't be, and the music and the credits that accompany it, I don't think they could be more perfect. Like, I don't think anybody could set a scene for this better.
Yeah,
but actually the rest of the film's not like that at all, but it sets a scene.
It does. I think it goes with it, though. It sets the scene because that guy, the Ministry of Defense guy, who also has an OBE.
Yeah.
So he's an important fella.
Yeah.
He's like I say, he's just up to no good. And that music sort of matched with the visuals and stuff kind of tells you that he shouldn't really be doing this.
Yeah.
He's a sleazy guy.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, this sleazy music to go with it. But it's strangely hypnotic, that music. I like it, though.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. Like, absolutely brilliant. Uh-huh. So he goes into the subway and propositions a prostitute. I mean, he
but is she
a prostitute? Well, I'm not sure she is. She's just a woman.
I don't think she is. A woman walking past
in the subway. She's in the tube station, Russell Square tube station. Uh-huh. And he propositions her, and she kicks him in the bollocks and runs off.
Rightly so. And then you hear sort of strange breathing in the background, and the camera sort of pans to his face as if someone is there in the tunnels with them.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see is them sort of lying on the stairs, like you touched on before, where the two students find him lying on the stairs and stuff.
We don't know how he's ended up lying on the stairs.
Something's happened to him. He's disappeared. Eh?
How's he lying on the stairs? What's that? Because he's been kicked in the balls.
I don't know how he got from there to this. No, I don't know. Bit, right? Maybe he's trying to run away from the... Yeah, yeah. How did he get on the stairs? It's a good question. But there's other questions as well. Because we'll go on.
I mean, it's a great
there's
film,
lots of questions.
It doesn't really make
there's ways one you or can two pick holes in it.
Yeah.
Which I've tried to sort of figure out in my head, and I do have a few ideas, but I'm sure we'll get there. Well,
I think you've probably thought more about it than the filmmakers then, because I think the plot holes that are there are just plot holes, and you've got to get past them. Which is easy to do. So what I think I read a few bits about it after watching it, and we're talking about the company obviously left these workers in the tunnel in the 1892 and let them rot and stuff like that. And obviously there's this disparity between people of power treating people like shit, and he is the same. Like, that idea gets across straight away. He's in power. He's doing stuff he shouldn't do because people in power, politicians, all that shit, can get away with that stuff.
Like you said, they can get away with it. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And he's treating normal people like shit. And also, when they find out it's him, they're like, why on earth is he in a tube station? Like, he shouldn't be in there.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of like, okay, it's all right for you scumbags to be in there, but this guy shouldn't be anywhere near this kind of trouble. And I think that's what those opening scene does, and that opening credit sets up that idea of the upper class and the lower class.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously, people
who
live in the underground tunnels is quite obvious.
The lowest of the low, aren't they? I mean, they're like animals, really. But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's loads of sort of commentary on the class system as it was then. And I mean, still exists now, doesn't it? Mm. But there's a definite commentary on that, because when sort of Calhoun, Inspector Calhoun, Donald Pleasence, when he's in sort of, he's told about what's happened in the tube tunnels and stuff like that, he kind of looks through his files. It's always already in his head that a couple of normal people, shall we say, have gone missing.
Yeah.
And he kind of, because this guy's a person of somewhat importance, they're going to have to start investigating it.
And previously, so they would just leave it.
Exactly. They just leave it because a Polish baker had gone missing or whatever. But I that class sort of stuff's in there.
I think it does a good job of showing a kind of multicultural London, even though there's very few people in it. There's still like Windrush people, I assume, like who are there, and people from different places. I think it does a good job of that, a little bit heavy-handedly, but it adds that element into it as well. It doesn't really go anywhere with it, but it shows it, even though
it
wouldn't need to, really. One thing I want to say at this point is the American guy, Alex, played by David Ladd, is probably the worst actor I've ever seen in anything in the entire
Well, he is, but I'm sure he doesn't care. It was his brother that was a producer on the film, so that might well
his dad's Alan Ladd, who was a big, Alan Ladd was a big movie.
Oh, is it his dad, is it?
Yeah.
His dad who was the producer.
This guy was a child star. And like most child stars, actually can't act because you don't really need to when you're little.
There you go with the child stars. So strangely enough, this film is about the class system, and you know, this is a little bit Jobs for the Boys, isn't it? Behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, it's
very good, is it?
It's an American director, guy called Gary Sherman, is it? And
that's right. Yes,
I think he wanted to make this film in the US, which would have been slightly different, but couldn't get funding for it. So came to England where a horror film, we'll give you the money for that. And he ended up making it. So presumably either the class system stuff is an accident, because you don't really have that the same in the US.
Yeah, I don't think it's an accident, because I think he wanted to write a film about the English class system.
Okay.
And the only way you could get it made was by it being a horror.
Okay.
Yeah, so like shoehorned it into that. There is a great introduction of the cannibal, who is just called the man.
The man, and there's a woman.
Yeah.
The woman.
Yeah, the woman. But there's a great introduction of his lay, which is like a 7-minute
absolutely amazing. It just goes on and on and on. So slowly, so creepily. Mm-hmm. What I would say is, I don't know if it's the same guy who did that opening music who did the soundtrack throughout, but the soundtrack and the sound effects on this film are incredible. Like the kind of the noises, it's like
little
you
drip.
The dripping.
Drip of water.
You can hear like things creaking and scratching. And like you say, you could hear the
kind
of breathing when the guy was on the platform before. Mm-hmm. And imagine what it would sound like now in a cinema with all, like the kind of 4D surround sound with like people breathing behind you and dripping in front of you and all around and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They managed to conjure that up in obviously very rudimentary technology at the time. And you still get all of that, but it just, you feel like you're there, and it's like almost you're peeking inside of it as well, because you can only see a little bit of it at a time. It's just continuous shot as it moves around.
For 7 minutes, I mean, that's massive, that, isn't it? And there's like maggots and rats and, you know, hands lying around and stuff like that.
Fingers, you see the Mr. OBE like lying on the floor. You don't know whether he's alive or dead, but he's not.
Well, he's blinking, though, isn't he?
He blinks.
He's
blinking. Yeah, I thought it was the next bit. He blinks.
And there's bits like that in there. But this shows that this director, Gary Sherman, he's got a lot of talent, I think. I mean, this is his first film and stuff.
he's got a lot of talent, I think, to just go for it and do something like that.
And, you know, the visual, the practical effects and the visual effects of the half-eaten corpses and half-rotten hands and things hanging on the wall. And I mean, it's horrible. It is horrible.
It's not nice.
There's two things with this film. I think the London Underground is a fascinating piece of engineering and work anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in London and you're going down the tube and you know they've been there from like 1918, whatever, Victorian times. It has a kind of, I mean, obviously some of the stations are newer, but it has this kind of weird feeling. And you know there's doors and tunnels that are there, and you know there's different ways in and out and all of that kind of stuff. And I think it's always been something that's fascinated me. Just that potential of what's beyond it and all of that kind of stuff.
It's like the mystique of it, isn't it? That's the thing. And also just there's a couple of times.
The feat of doing it. Like, it's like when you look at Egypt or whatever, and you know, how the fuck did they do that? You think, okay, in the 1800s, how did they make this huge underground network of tunnels for trains to run on? Like, it's mad.
I mean, there's a few times in the film where it says it's like a rabbit warren down there, you know. There's loads of stuff down there. It's got lots of strengths. I mean, we'll just talk about that tracking shot and stuff like that. But then the sort of, you know, how interesting the London Underground is and, you know, where it can turn and stuff like that. But Donald Pleasance is just completely the man. And we get, for 1 minute, I think, someone like that.
Yeah.
We get Christopher Lee in there as well.
And a tete-a-tete with Donald Pleasance. Two opposing characters, styles. One's MI5, who's saying you need to
Again, it's that
this.
Class stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because Christopher Lee is this... He couldn't get any more hoity-toity, could he, Christopher Lee?
No, you know, he's dressed the same as the OBE guy. Bowler hat, three-piece suit, and pinstripe suit. And, cane or a long umbrella or whatever. And he basically comes in and is like, you know, you guys get back to looking after your little council estate jobs. You know, you're missing greengrocers and missing butchers and stuff like that.
Because they find more sleaze, don't they, connected with the Mr. OB, don't they?
Yeah, I don't think you need that, but it's...
Videos of his bedroom.
It like
what a sleazy bastard. I think Donald Pleasance at one point goes, "What a suspicious bastard." While he's naked, he's brandy.
Donald Pleasance is eating, starts drinking his brandy, and he says to Norman Rossett, "Do you want some?" And he's not while I'm on duty, sir. He says, "You pompous punch."
he does call him a pompous punch, doesn't he? He's excellent, you know. Donald Pleasance in this, isn't he? He's so good.
It's just brilliant.
He's just it's like how many times he's like.
He's serious, but he's funny. It's just great, and he's dressed a bit like Sherlock Holmes a bit.
He's like both. I don't know. He's so strange. He's like a new creation of a detective, isn't he? And that's why I said like it would be so good in a TV series. It would just be excellent.
It would be really good. Doing like creepy, kind of mysterious crimes or may not be paranormal or whatever. Would be excellent.
The eccentric, quirky cop, isn't he? Like Frost and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
he's a bit like Frost.
He must have took loads of stuff like that.
Frost's outfit's the same as this.
And the hat, isn't it? Same hat. Do you think he's just nicked it? I think it's a possibility.
People who, like, think nobody's ever seen Deathline. I'll just copy that.
I quite like that film, Deathline.
One other thing that stands out to me, I mean, there's a great attack in there. With
There's two great attacks for different reasons, isn't there?
Yeah.
The first one is some unwitting three workmen who get attacked.
Yeah.
And there's a shovel in the head.
Yeah, that's great.
That's the first one.
That was superb.
And there's a broom in the heart.
All the way through and out the other side.
There is.
So basically the cannibal man, these guys have been down there, these workers who were left to rot ended up...
Yes.
I mean, there's loads of exposition in the film, so we're not spoiling anything. They've somehow survived. We're a few generations on. and then the man is there and keeps taking people from the tube to go
to eat.
So
yes,
here's the thing: if they can get out, why have they stayed in there?
But haven't they recently just getting out?
Yeah,
that's what my thinking was.
But there's a lot of skeletons in there.
There is, because his wife, the woman, is dying. She's ill because they've got the plague, haven't they? These unfortunate cannibals, probably from biting the heads off rats. I would say that's the main place they got it. So getting out of the hole where they're living in, has that killed the wife? You know, that final push to get out? I think that's how I worked out in my head. But maybe not.
Explain it. There's loads of films and stuff where people live in the sewers and stuff like that, and there's tribes of people under there. They can obviously get out, but they choose to do it. So I would imagine that, yes, over time, they have been able to get out at some point. But by that point, they're just the guys who live under there. They can't talk.
Well, that's it.
Can they?
Yeah.
They can't talk?
Well, they can't talk. We'll get to that bit, because it's one of the other best bits of the film. Yeah. But, they can't get out, but they're hideous, aren't they? And they're probably quite frightened of the outside world, I would imagine.
This is another good part of it, because as much as these are cannibals that are killing people and eating them, you do end up feeling sorry for them.
Of course you do. I mean, because ultimately they've been left there by, you know, the authorities, haven't they? Mm-hmm. They've just been left to rot, and they're just down there surviving, essentially, aren't they? That's all they're doing. Yeah. So, you do feel sympathetic for especially the man, don't you?
But the woman, I struggle to look at her face. It is horrible. The makeup and stuff that the man and the woman have got is amazing. It's really good, so effective. What speeds up the investigation is that amazing scene with Christopher Lee, where Christopher Lee basically tells him to mind his own business, and Donald Pleasence is like, well, fuck that, I'm going to find out what's happened to this guy then.
He tells him to fuck off. I don't think anybody's told Christopher Lee to fuck off, probably in his whole life.
Christopher Lee is amazing in it.
He's amazing in everything,
that's why. He must be in for about 2 minutes, but he's superb. He's just a good
presence, isn't he? He's just a complete presence, and he's great at doing everything, I think, Christopher Lee.
I don't want him to come back.
Being a massive Hammer Horror fan and stuff, he's good as a baddie, he's good as a goodie. Mm-hmm. He's good as a scientist. He's always standoffish. He's just amazing. The thing is about Christopher Lee as well, he lived a very interesting life. I think he was in special forces in the war and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So he brought out a heavy metal album towards the later. What a guy. What a guy. I just love him, mate. I think he's just amazing.
I think he's great as well.
One of the reasons that a lot of people don't like this film, or people were put off by it, was the fact that Donald Pleasence and Christopher Lee are in it, and Christopher Lee wanted to be in the film so he could act with Donald Pleasence, and he was only in it for, like we say, a minute or whatever, but they're not really in it in the same scene together. You don't really see them on the screen at the same time, and the reason for that is the height difference.
Okay.
Christopher Lee's massive. He's like 6'6" or something, Christopher Lee, and Donald Pleasence is a short man. So the only time you see them in the same shot is when Christopher Lee's sitting down.
You know, I never Pleasence thought about it, because obviously it's a back and forth between them. So I didn't really think.
See, I was fine with it, mate. I was fine with it, mate. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like a little bit weird, and you got like them playing off each other with
because there's a great shot. Well, he comes in and he's very tall in the middle of the screen. He's got his hand on his cane, and he's obviously meant to be big and imposing and talking down to them, which is why I think that works.
Yeah,
and then
when
you see the reverse shot and it goes to those two, Rossington and Pleasence, the framing of them in the shot, it's almost like they're kind of naughty school kids, because They've been told off for like snooping where they shouldn't because they found the secret room with the camera and screen in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And obviously he's been drinking his brandy and he's on, is there anything we can nick? And he's really enjoying the fact that he's kind of, he's investigating somebody being missing, but he's almost trying to like finger him for being a bad guy at the same time.
Yeah, sure. But the other thing I was going to say about Pleasance was he's really good when they decide to go to the pub and get pissed.
Amazing.
I think Donald Pleasance just doesn't care about anybody. Mm. He doesn't care about, you know, he doesn't care about the establishment because he puts on at a point when he's trying to ring Mr. OB's office, he puts on this very posh accent
funny,
again.
That's really funny.
Just taking the piss. Just it's completely really taking the piss.
He's like, oh dear.
He doesn't, doesn't care about the students. You get your hair cut and all this stuff you say to them. And he just doesn't care about any. All he wants to do is his job, really, isn't he? But then again, he is like hamstrung in a way by the people in authority, isn't he?
Yeah, so he's like, he gets told to leave it alone. But
that's
at the point where he, like I say, he decides, well, actually, I will go and solve this crime after he's been told not to. Before that, he's a bit like, oh, maybe there's something in this. Anyway, it goes on, it goes on, it goes on. We know it's going to come to a crux where there's obviously a reason why David Ladd and his girlfriend are in it from the start and see it and whatever.
Yeah.
She becomes integral to how the plot plays out. She ends up being captured by him and he doesn't kill her straight away. He's not sure what to do with her. But what happens is the roles are reversed a bit. He's trying to communicate with her. He doesn't, these guys communicate in grunts and he's trying to communicate with her to get across how he feels and what he wants to do, but he can't do that because he can't talk. She doesn't say a single word to him. She starts, she's just like grunting.
She's grunting, isn't she?
Like she can't get any words out. So she kind of goes down to his level a bit out of fear and out of being in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting thing. But then he's desperate to say something to her. And he says,
mind the doors.
Mind the doors. Mind the doors.
Mind the doors. And the reason he says mind the doors is that's all he's heard from the people shout. I mean, if I think about this film again, I'll think of Donald Pleasance and I'll think of mind the doors. Yeah,
but then there's that bit
mind
where,
the doors.
Absolutely.
That played the man, Hugh Armstrong. I mean, loads of people who have actually watched this film love his performances. Well, like,
it's brilliant.
He's almost like a Frankenstein monster, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's like a sympathetic character, even though he's doing hideous things. But the reason he's doing hideous things are because he's just being left by, you know, wider society or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love that bit. But obviously, if he was from the Northeast, he would be saying, stand clear of the doors, please.
Yeah,
wouldn't
in
he?
Various celebrities' voices. From the 90s. Jimmy Dale 1 week, Tim Healy the next.
Yeah.
All the
but there's what, if you haven't seen the film, switch off at this point, I would say, because there is a wonderful injury caused to the man by a Cuban heel, which I did like.
Yeah, David comes back and gets his Cuban heel in the ear.
He does. So there is a reason for them shoes. But for making it tall. There's one other throwaway line, which I really love, where Donald Pleasance goes into the, I think it's like where they're doing the blood work or whatever.
Yeah.
And he goes, bacon. All right, Dracula. All right, Dracula. That made us laugh. Like, I love that bit. So loads of bits that we haven't talked about, like Pleasance's quick wit and stuff like that.
You couldn't say them all because it's the whole his entire script is fantastic.
He was just ad-libbing though? I think he might have been just making it up.
There's one thing that I really like when they're in the tube and there's like a scuffle going on. The ads, you know, we talk about ads and the things that are in there. There's an advert for a portable pub. I want to find out more about.
You noticed the adverts for the portable pump, and I was looking at the James Bond poster. And when they go to a bookshop, Charlie Chap Chaplin and Laurel and Hardy. That's what I noticed.
Portable pup.
And Jimi Hendrix as well.
Jimi Hendrix on the wall, I noticed that. Yeah. Che Guevara on the student's wall. So even in 1972, students had Che Guevara on the wall.
It's just never left them.
So that's a brilliant film, Brett. Thank you so much for recommending it. I would honestly watch it. It's an absolute stone cold British horror classic with some great performances in it, great music, great sound effects, great practical effects, great makeup. It's just fantastic.
It's a gem, isn't it?
Plot holes galore, really. But you know, you can get past it quite easily because
suspend your disbelief. That's what we'd say for sure. Absolutely, it is a forgotten gem.
Would they have had time
enough
to have a baby when they were eating each other? Who knows? But they have.
Who knows about that? Don't think about that, man.
So yeah, just go watch it. It's on Amazon. I think it's about, you can buy a Blu-ray for about £8. It's on Amazon Prime or on demand to watch, and like I say, on Talking Pictures.
Talking Pictures
on whatever that date is, the
Friday, 14th, it's on Friday, I think.
The 14th.
Yeah.
So if you listen to this on the day it comes out, it's on tonight. It'll be on catch up otherwise. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go now. But before we go, Brett, introduce this week's music.
Yes, this week we'll have music from a band that we've had on before, actually, called The Battles of Winter. And this is a gritty post-punk single. It's called A Flaw in the Hourglass.
Yeah, I like these guys, so I'm glad they're on again. We'll get that player now. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Remember to subscribe and like and share. Cheers for the music. Cheers for the film. Brett, until next time, see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Devilish games, this devilish art.